20 American firefighters who normally work with the Angeles National Forest are back in California today after volunteering to fight the devastating Australian wildfires, which took the lives of three other American firefighters when their plane crashed. The worst of the fires have abated, but the fire season in Australia is hardly over. Fires raging this week near Canberra, where temperatures soared over 104 degrees. The Australian fires killed more than 30 people and an estimated billion animals. And there are concerns over air quality, not just now, but in the long term, which scientists say are global concerns. Things like thunderstorms act like chimneys launching particles into the atmosphere, where they may hitch a ride on the jet stream. Atmospheric scientist Neil Leroux is with the University of Nevada. He joins us now. Professor Leroux, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And just your sense of what you've been seeing in the fires. You've seen a lot of fires, and we understand that there's been enough carbon dioxide in the smoke coming from the fires in Australia to rival that country's total human-caused emissions. How would you characterize how big this is?
Yeah, well, I think that's right. And it's really the scope, the size and extent of these fires, in addition to the severity, that is quite remarkable. Obviously, Australia is no stranger to intense and devastating wildfires, but really the scope this year, and like you said, essentially equaling the annual emissions, anthropogenic emissions of carbon dioxide at this point.
Yeah. Well, and before we go into the long-term impacts, which we want to hear about, talk about what goes into the air right away.
So there's this kind of immediate impact, which tends to come from these very small particulates contained within the smoke. Diameter is less than 2.5 microns, or PM2.5 for short. And this is particularly hazardous because it eludes most of your natural filtration mechanisms. It can get deep in your lungs and, in fact, diffuse into your bloodstream, where it can then have certain cardiovascular impacts. So in addition to just the difficulty breathing, we can see some of these other kind of deleterious health impacts over time.
Well, and of course, there's the fact that, you know, this smoke and ash sometimes goes up in the air and then particles and ash come back down.
Yeah. In addition to the particulates that you're breathing, these plumes are lofting burning particles of ash and what we call firebrands, which can then land in advance of the fire front and rapidly spread the fire through the landscape. And really one of the more hazardous ways that these fires spread.
Well, and when it comes again to just sheer breathing, you're seeing cardiovascular problems. And researchers also saw decreased birth weights in California?
Yeah, that's right. We've had a number of studies done after some of the high-impact fires in Southern California in particular that show a host of negative health outcomes, and one of them is decreased birth weights. So certainly, you know, anytime you have people in vulnerable segments of the population, whether it's due to underlying health issues or certainly in the case of pregnancies, we then see things like decreased birth weights following these large-scale events affecting highly populated regions.
Yeah, just terrible. But let's talk now about the global impact. And here's where we have to go back to, what, fourth grade? And the difference between the atmosphere and the stratosphere. Talk about these long-term effects and this plume of smoke that, you know, creates thunderstorms.
Yeah, exactly. So we have two parts of the atmosphere that we're concerned about, the troposphere, which is close to the surface, and this is where all of the weather is occurring. And then the overlying layer is called the stratosphere. And what we see with these intense fires is that they generate their own thunderstorms, which effectively double the height to which the smoke will be injected into the atmosphere and can push it deep enough that it ascends all the way up into that stratospheric layer. And once it's there, it can stay there for a prolonged period of time, sometimes 5, 6, maybe even a year-long period, 5 or 6 months, that is, or up to a year even, where we can track these plumes of smoke aerosol circling the globe. In fact, we know already that the smoke has fully encircled the southern hemisphere, going back to some of the events that started in December and are continuing now. And so this is stuff that's going to stay there for a long time because there's no mechanism to remove it from the atmosphere once it gets that deep.
Well, okay. What do you say to people who say, good, get it up out of our atmosphere, get it up in the stratosphere? You know, what's the problem with it up there?
Well, it may not be something that we're immediately breathing. What it is doing is interacting with sunlight coming in to the Earth's climate system. And in this case, it's actually absorbing some of the sun's energy higher up in the atmosphere in the stratosphere and warming the stratosphere a little bit. It's also decreasing the amount of sunlight that's reaching Earth's surface. And so there's this kind of complex interaction that could have kind of climate scale impacts and certainly regional impacts on the temperature of Earth, the temperature of the upper atmosphere. And some of these impacts are not fully understood at this point, especially since we don't have a lot of documentation for events of this magnitude. There's really just a few of these increasing understanding of the impact that they're having, but a whole lot of work still to be done.
Right. Well, David Moore at the National Center for Earth Observation said he believes that these, you know, clouds of smoke, while they're up in the stratosphere, can then hop on the jet stream and just use it to commute, you know, around the world. What's the bigger concern? I mean, we talked about the particles. Are the particles going as well? So when these warm winds hit places far from Australia, will they contain those particles? Or is it solely the carbon dioxide, which is in this smoke, which we know contributes to warming?
Yeah, it's kind of a mix. And again, there are a number of potentially competing influences here. The carbon dioxide is a gas that's emitted into the atmosphere and can remain in the troposphere and can remain relatively well mixed and contributes, generally speaking, to the greenhouse effect, although it's quite complicated by how much of that is going to be reabsorbed by the growth of new vegetation following these fires. And that's kind of different than the particulate matter, these aerosol particles that are getting injected very deep into the atmosphere and can have these kind of radiative effects where it's intercepting sunlight. And some of those signals are actually kind of competing. In the one sense, carbon dioxide can be warming the lower part of the atmosphere. On the other hand, some of these smoke particles are intercepting sunlight and can either warm the upper atmosphere or potentially cool the lower atmosphere. So again, there's a kind of complex chain of interactions that we're still working to tease out how all of that is going to balance out over time.
Well, you mentioned how high the smoke is at this point, you know, 30,000 feet, above 40,000 feet. So you're not going to be breathing that in, but is there a chance that a year and a half from now, and again, this is a chance, you know, a speculation, that smoke might, you know, be on a jet stream that comes down the Atlantic or something, and people find themselves breathing smoke from a fire the year previous in Australia?
Probably not in any appreciable concentration that would be problematic from a kind of human health standpoint. Most of this stuff is traceable in the deep upper atmosphere for, you know, 5 to 6 months, and after that it becomes so diffuse that it would be difficult to really identify it beyond that point. So, but again, it's not fully understood at this point.
Well, and what about people who can get up there? You know, flights, you know, personality, the profile of these clouds up there. Are they thunderstorms up there? And does that make flight dangerous?
Yeah, so this is a great question. Flying through these clouds and these deep plumes as they're ascending on their way to the stratosphere could be potentially very hazardous for aircraft. We saw there was a Qantas Airlines flight that had encountered severe turbulence as it flew through one of these developing clouds and had to make an emergency landing. And we know from some of the research that we've done here in the United States, looking inside these clouds with radars, that they can have updraft speeds upwards of 130 miles per hour, flanked by downdrafts as strong as 60 miles per hour. So you can imagine the kind of whiplash effect that would have on an aircraft flying through something like that. And it's really as strong as the updrafts in Earth's strongest thunderstorms, and certainly not somewhere you would want to be flying an aircraft.
No. Your thoughts about the people in Australia, not all of Australia, but even if you watched tennis recently, you saw the temperature at, you know, 100. That was in Melbourne, not where the fires are. But, you know, then we see these images of how people have been, you know, trying to maintain some health through this. I mean, your thoughts as you watch this.
Yeah, and you know, we've seen it here in the Western United States as well. It has both that immediate health impact in terms of breathing this stuff, but also a psychological impact in terms of being in these smoke palls for day after day after day. It feels quite oppressive. I know back in the summer of 2018 here in California, and then the following fall with some of the very big fires that we had, you know, everybody was feeling that effect. And my colleagues in Australia have communicated this. It's really quite significant, the psychological impact in addition to the health impact.
Yeah. That's atmospheric scientist, the Professor Neil LaRoe from the University of Nevada, from the studios of KUNR. Neil, thanks so much for, you know, the science lesson for us. Thank you.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for reaching out. Real honor and pleasure to speak with you.